Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 115, Software Defined Storage 101, Part 2. This is the second episode in the Software Defined Storage episode. And today, my guest is the one and only, needs only one name, Rawlinson. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Rick.
So, Rawlinson, you're an interesting one, man. You're always at these events. I run into you. I've known you forever, for crying out loud. But give the listeners a sense of what is your role, what do you do, and what kind of technology expertise do you have?
Absolutely. So, officially, my name is Rawlinson Rivera. I work currently for the Office of the CTO and the Storage and Availability Business Unit at VMware. Currently, I'm a principal architect, and I am responsible for working on technologies that are specifically in the space of the software-defined storage as well as availability, with a lot of the focus of my time spent around, you know, virtual SAN, virtual volumes, and some of the things that we're creating in the software-defined storage space, as well as, you know, diving into some of the newer use cases that are come up and things we're working on towards, you know, solidifying and providing some sort of better ways, better storage capabilities and solutions from not just a technology standpoint, but operations for things like OpenStack and cloud native applications. So I spend a lot of time working on those things now at VMware.
Yeah, and you know, Rawlinson, this is a really important area, I think, in the data center, because these new technologies you talked about, vSphere Virtual Volumes, vSAN, but more importantly, that shift to a cloud stack like OpenStack or cloud native apps and more. We need an infrastructure that can really work that way too. So I think that this is a really interesting time. I think that there's a lot of casual curiosity around these other things, but when you talk to people that are actually in the process of transitioning to these new types of application styles, how does the infrastructure working backwards from a software-defined perspective, how does that really help them achieve the application goal?
Well, you know, traditionally, first and foremost, like we tend to now really talk about software-defined storage as well as software-defined many things. But when we particularly talk about software-defined storage, this is not a technology. This is a more of an approach that delivers several levels of efficiencies that are not just being introduced by technology itself, right? So some of the technology is, you know, some of the intricate features that come along with a storage stack, you know, many of those features that we all know, but also a big portion of that is the ability to, through a systematic level of functionalities, through APIs and enhancing the operational efficiencies, reducing the risks and also simplifying the complexity that exists on the way any particular storage infrastructure is consumed, managed, and monitored and administered. It's something that it's being able to not only deliver that, but also how does that impact to the way in which applications work today? And essentially, there's a lot to it, right? It's not, like I said, it's not just a technology, but also when you think about what we have to deal with on a daily basis from a storage infrastructure, and how does that map to a business procedure, to an operation impact that it has on the way you not only deploy an application, but the way you make it. All right, so we're looking into ways so that we can deliver some of the efficiencies that we've kind of dealt with for so many years in terms of pain points and dealing with administering, you know, really complex storage infrastructures, now putting into a virtualized environment where, you know, we keep evolving and evolving for some time on technology, but now the technology really needs to incorporate a more efficient way of operations. How do the applications work? Deliver more of a say, for example, to the way an application is going to consume its resources from a storage perspective, its capacity, its availability, its workload characteristics, and those things. And now we make it so that they're programmatically being delivered, right? And overall, delivers what everyone is looking for, the ultimate sort of nirvana place, which is, you know, agility with control, which is something that is very hard to do when you have to combine technology with some sort of operating procedure, some operating model, right? And those are the things that this particular approach and strategy are going to facilitate by allowing us to overcome, you know, some of the complexity that exists on the traditional physical environments, but also now being able to deliver more efficient way of consuming, delivering, and providing the way the resources are given up to an application, right? And that happens to obviously these sort of APIs that we have where in a two-way communication, not only is a storage infrastructure going to tell you what it can do, but now the virtual infrastructure can tell you what it needs and what it wants based on what it's providing. So that sort of approach goes obviously beyond a little bit of the technology that's in place. Mm-hmm. Now it delivers efficiency, risk mitigation. It's able to now, when you can deliver and build applications that can interact with the system, which they can intelligently give you a profile capability, something they specifically want, but we can eliminate a human, right, per se, or some process that takes time that keeps us from delivering the value or the business or what the business needs, becomes more appealing and better. And again, this is exactly what's happening with the whole software-defined storage strategy that's kind of being brought along to the industry now.
Well, when we look at some of the apps and then their longer-term potential, you know, is there a day or a time, and if we can do it now, great, tell me. But is there going to be a day where, let's just say, a business-critical app, and let's just say it's, you know, a truly modern mm-hmm. app that, you know, thinks more than an operating system, right? Mm-hmm. Is there going to be a time where it could say, hey, vSAN, in the next hour, I actually expect that I'm going to be doing a very big bit of analytical data. Can you give me more priority on flash preemptively, stuff like that, rather than respond once the IOPS go up or something like that? Can we see applications get that smart, and will the APIs be able to talk like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that sort of thing exists already today, and not just specifically on, you know, on a VMware platform per se, right? VMware delivers a certain level of that capability. But then there are other things when it comes to the cloud-native platforms and some of these new type of applications that other functionalities are being delivered from other vendors, from other companies that kind of do that sort of thing, are able to orchestrate that sort of behavior. But also at the same time, from a VMware perspective, the way in which, for example, vSAN works in a way that all the reads and writes go to the caching tier, right, or the write buffer, whichever architecture is implemented, which as long as the data is hot, as long as the data is being utilized and is demanding more, it will always get more. It will get that response. Whereas when it's not, that goes kind of given away to someone else, which is basically the same principle that is applied within the vSphere platform on some of the features that we have, like DRS and some of those things, right? But when you look into the more application-centric behavior, now we're talking about being able to orchestrate and be able to place and deliver these sort of resources and be able to have the mobility capabilities of an application. And not only mobile, because you don't necessarily have to move VMs to achieve the goals that you're trying to do in the new kind of cloud-native platform per se, because now we're talking about microservices, you know, the composition of hundreds, potentially thousands of these services that can give you and deliver the performance or the results you expect from an application in some other way, shape, or form, which is not always necessarily dependent on the infrastructure. The piece that we're able to sort of do, and we'll very soon be able to have this because it doesn't quite exist there in the way we do it today, we'll be able to do that with some of the innovations that are coming from VMware, such as, you know, the Photon controller, the Photon platform. But there are obviously other cloud-native sort of pieces out there that are do that, like Mesosphere and then all these other things that are available in the market that let you do that. One of the things that we're delivering, which is pretty unique, and hopefully this is something that more customers and more developers, as we get into the more different use cases than just, you know, monolithic type of application and you know, just only enterprise type of things, where we kind of get into the whole DevOps space as well, where you can leverage the policy framework that exists within the infrastructure, that you can put in those sort of qualifications into a standardized sort of framework, which will be able to be served onto your applications on demand whenever they need it, right? And that's where the real power of this sort of thing comes along, where you can deliver that agility with control, and that comes in the sense of, if I need it, I'm going to get it when I need it, but I don't have to have some sort of, you know, really sort of convoluted, orchestrated, or some manual process so that I can get that in the point in time I need it. So that's kind of where things are going. We could do some of it today, mm-hmm. And it's going to be fully implemented as we continue to evolve You know, I think within 2017, that time frame, now in 2017, you'll see a lot of progression in that area when it comes respective to that stuff.
You know, it's really exciting. I've watched the market change. You know, there's a lot of technologies in play, but, you know, we can't do anything with the application without the infrastructure. And I think that there's always historically been this battle between application and infrastructure, you know, a wall or just some sort of organizational conundrum that really has prohibited proper working together. And you know, this is very much a characteristic of the legacy app, right? So the database team fights with the storage team, those types of things. You know, what's the new dynamic? I mean, do you need a ponytail to be this type of application model? Or is there just a different perspective and a different sense of delivering these apps? I mean, how does it really work from the customers you talk to from an IT work group point of view?
Well, in a sense, it's very different, to be honest, because taking an when you look at the applications and the way they're being developed, and some of them may have to be refactored depending on what the approach is, depending on the pros and cons and the benefits and values. And as it pertains to the way they're going to consume storage, you see today things are very different. Things are not all about persistent storage. It's not just about block IP-based persistent storage. There's other forms of storage requirements that are needed for some of these applications. So they have to be able to come in a way that could be consumed. But when you at the crux of the whole thing is that when you think about what is it that we care about in application delivers a value, some sort of value proposition to a business, a revenue generating kind of thing, where you need to make sure that there's the right performance, the right availability, and the right recoverability of that particular application if anything breaks or that happens. Traditionally, we tend to deliver that in the form of infrastructure, which is where vSphere comes in and gives you features like HA, DRS, and all these wonderful things that are there. But now we're getting to the point to exactly what you mentioned before, where the application owners kind of now build that into the sort of application. And there are some of the more monolithic type of applications that today, some of the more business type of critical apps, for example, database servers applications and mail applications, where they have their own availability capabilities built into the actual software. And when you take that into a more cloud-native type of application, they have that capability as well. They're built into it, so they now don't have to depend on all of the different things that are delivered by an infrastructure as we do today, which now makes it a bit more flexible for the app owners, the app developers to do and kind of build that sort of capabilities into the process, but still they want to be able to consume the necessary resources in the different ways, particularly on storage. And they want to be able to do that in a systematic way where it could be dynamically added, removed, changed, and reprovisioned at any point in time based on application requirements and the different types of storage requirements that it may have, whether it might be a persistent or not persistent, whether there's an image, whether it's an API base, whether it's a blob or an object, regardless of what it is. The point is, give me access to this sort of resource without having to depend on all the infrastructure inflexibility that existed before. I don't want to have to move a VM. I don't have to move a container. I should be able to get to it and get what I need in some form of simplified way, which obviously the policy framework and the systematic approach with all the API access and communication that is being delivered and designed today for software-defined storage solution, it's where we start kind of see that come along even more now.
You know, Rawlinson, you used the word availability a number of times. And, you know, that's really where my area of expertise comes in, because I challenge people to really latch onto that word. And, we a lot of times think of availability in the run state, right? I'm going to deploy this great infrastructure with high service levels and keep it highly available, redundancy and great performing components, so all those types of things, and app redundancy, right? We can extend that to the model of the app and distribute components of the application as well. But I use the availability term when something doesn't go as expected, because tell me what you think. I think that the expectation on the data center and these applications today is very high. And what I mean by that is you can deploy things, new services, new applications, even in the legacy app model, but especially cloud stack applications, you can deploy so easy. That expectation applies when something goes wrong, people want stuff fixed right away.
No, you're right. That's the right way to. I mean, that's how I see it as well. Because it's not just about availability. I can go there once things. It needs to be there at any way, shape, or form. It needs to be easily accessible. It needs to be, availability to me means it's right there when something goes wrong, and I can either continue or come right back within a very minimal amount of time that would impact a business or any sort of process that's being impacted by some sort of outage in that kind of case. So availability in the sense is, you know, traditionally we would try to build availability as a maybe, I wouldn't say a secondary thing, but it was always an item that would be built or considered as a infrastructure of any kind, of any level, whether it's network, storage, compute, you name it, always has to be considered and built, and things need to be built accordingly to that. Mm-hmm. Where now it just has to be there. There's no afterthought about that. It just needs to be able to, not only if something goes wrong, because it's not only about going wrong, what if we need to make a change and you need to fall back to that particular decision that was made, design, or something that will deliver that so-called availability wherever it's coming from, and you need to use it without something really going bad. You come into a situation where nothing really failed or went bad. You just need to go there for whatever scenario presented itself.
And for the listeners, you know, the practical tip of advice is, you know, in my opinion, take that mindset of availability and apply it to the complete infrastructure. You know, what I guess I'm trying to avoid is, you know, the most legacy app run on a cloud stack platform. It just doesn't work, right? It's not the right home for it. Same for,
absolutely,
you know, designing the most modern data center. And then, you know, this is where I spend a lot of my expertise is, but
right,
then put no investment to backup, you know, whatever that
right
might be, even just the simplest,
right,
you know, you might be all flash vSAN for the run state. And
mm-hmm
then you have the absolute cheapest thing to put your backups on. You know, you just,
right,
it's not comparable in a sense, but
correct.
You know, actually, it brings up a good point. One of the things that caught my eye of late, Rawlinson, and if you could explain to me what's going on, mm-hmm, but what is all flash vSAN, and how can people kind of get their head around that?
So the all flash vSAN is just one of the two architectures that are supported within our particular hyper-converged storage stack, which is, you know, obviously vSAN was the quintessential piece that we deliver about 2 years ago now. And now, obviously, being able to go beyond the initial introduction of vSAN, which is a hybrid model. Hybrid model basically means that you have a caching device that delivers all the performance that your applications need, and then there's a persistent, you know, device, in that case being magnetic devices, where that's where most of the data that's not active persists, and where we store it there. There's obviously different types of behavior with algorithms, with elevator algorithms and things that change by destaging and moving the data around automatically in a software-driven way, whereas the all-flash architecture changes the behavior in the way that the application works, where now you have two different types of flash devices. They can come in the form of whether it's an SSD, NVMe, Ultra DIMMs, you name it, all the things that are readily available now. But the one that delivers the performance tends to be a certain type. And when I mean certain type, it means a certain level of durability and can deliver a level of performance, you know, write-intensive type of device or read-intensive type of device. Whereas now the second tier could be made up of a different type of device, which obviously delivers a different kind of behavior, which maybe doesn't have to be as expensive as the device you use for what the device that we call as caching, which in all flash, there is no caching. What we identified in the hybrid as a caching is really a write buffer 100%. So that behavior delivers, you know, an incredible amount of performance that scales, obviously, with the way the system is built and done. But the thing is that, you know, the algorithms that are used there, the protocols that are used in terms of how things are going to be moved back into the particular active item and the based on the active working sets work entirely different than it is on the flash. And when it comes to delivering, you know, sub-millisecond latencies and predictable performance, that's the platform that is actually doing it now. We're actually, based on the numbers we've seen from the last quarter, it's becoming that vSAN all flash is kind of like the way most customers are going and becoming the standards, because they have the ability to go, you know, either way, it's up to them, right? Whichever way they implement based on the hardware they want to use.
And I love that, you know, vSAN as a technology is something that I think from the VMware perspective, because I'd probably follow that the most in my professional practice, but I really think that vSAN, it really has innovated, I think, more than the public is given it credit for. These are some examples, the scalability. You know, I talk to a lot of people that do a lot of different things, and one thing I've learned is that just because someone says, oh, I'm a vSphere shop, that really doesn't mean anything to the person next to them that would say the same thing. You know, just because we all might use vSphere or other hypervisors or other management models, what really happens inside is totally different. And what I've found is that even some very, very large environments, they are all in on vSAN. And, you know, this is one of those things that I'm like, really? At first I was shocked, you know, because I'm like, well, I thought, well, you know, there's all these larger environments, there's the vVol stuff, there's all these different things, but they're like, not right now, but what they've done, meaning announced and been in a couple of different releases, I guess it would be vSAN 6, which would be the second major release of it, they're like, what they've done and where they're going with it is exactly what we need, and that was a large financial services at that enterprise here in the States, and I'm like, whoa, right? So I kind of was myself taken back because, well, I haven't kept up enough on it then, and you know, for the listeners, this really should be something we take a look at.
I know. I mean, absolutely. I think that, and here's the one thing that obviously I was kind of like the lead of the product when I was in technical marketing of VMware from day one, right, before the inception and then all the way through the last release, where we focus a lot on the actual storage technologies and the capabilities. And then to be honest, storage is storage. vSAN does deliver a couple of things that are quite unique in terms of behavior and what it does. But for me, probably the most important thing, the most impactful feature or capability that we have is the fact that it's truly a software-defined type of solution where it delivers not only you know, technology and capabilities, but the operational aspect of it, the simplicity, the integration, and be able to work within the stack, something that comes already, you know, every ESXi host has it, and it kind of delivers those capabilities. It's very important. We tend to overlook operational efficiencies and some of those things, and for the most part, you know, folks, we will, and not even externally, but also internally ourselves, we've been, you know, most people, when it comes to storage, they focus on a lot of the data services that, you know, the product didn't have initially, which was part of the reason why, you know, that product was tailored to a specific use case at the beginning, just like everything else. We have to grow and kind of get into it. But I tell you what, when we release this next release, the 6.0 release, which we'll do sometime in Q1, Virtual SAN will have every single feature which is that's needed, which is why you're hearing these, you know, financial businesses not going, oh, we're going to go this way, because not only can we deliver the operational factor, the benefits from the risk mitigation aspect from an operating model, the performance capability, the scalability, and all the different values that are delivered there are now going to be fully fleshed and all baked into the software solution that is going to deliver what all these sort of businesses we're looking for need it, because we actually are going to deliver that now.
Good stuff. And I think I'd add that it's a perspective where this is not just an infrastructure play, because it's a significant management play that will affect the operations, right? You know, you can just throw infrastructure at infrastructure, and that's kind of like what you said, storage is storage. And my little tagline that I like to say is that you can always find lesser expensive storage, but there's a certain...
Correct.
There's a certain experience that goes with that.
Right.
But vSAN is this interesting spot where you can, if you want to, you can build it yourself. But then there's a whole market of bundling options, Evo Rail, Evo Rack, et cetera. But you can build it yourself,
I mean,
and hit the management levels that an organization wants. And I think that's one of the beauties.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you'll see some of that. I mean, actually, from now, from our case, in terms of, you know, depending on where you're going to introduce it, whether it's going to be an environment that you have already existing that could be outfitted to support vSAN, you have that capability. But now we're pushing the standard world. You go to a vSAN ready node with every single piece of that box from whoever you get it from, the vendor specific one, has everything that's validated from the hardware, the software, the firmware, and all that stuff. Because basically, you know, since we're an entirely solution that it's, agnostic of any individual or particular hardware, want to make sure that some of those things work or fine-tune to the things that we've tested and have validated in that case. But you still have the ability to, you know, build some of the, you know, build it on your own, build those components that let you do that. And then that's just the hardware, right? vCenter will give you access to storage policy-based management, which is a framework that controls all the policy and delivers the capacity, performance, and availability on an application basis. So you don't have to build all these RAID levels and all these things that we traditionally do, and now let the software, the policy framework, drive that, right? Because it's not about just the technology, but how do we consume and operate that? And just to be fair to the rest of the ecosystem, we took the same approach from vCenter, same logic, same concept, same policy, same object-based type of generic storage sort of infrastructure, and deliver that to the partners so that they can now do it with virtual volumes, which that's where virtual volumes comes into play. Mm-hmm. And they're exactly almost the same in terms of the concepts, but now you can see how, because now it's up to the partners themselves, the particular arrays that they have and the customer may already have, and as long as they expose their capabilities, which are basically features, you know, snapshotting, you know, availability, those kinds of things, you now expose that into the framework, and now that can be consumed by an application owner and dictate what they want, which is that kind of behavior that we kind of need now these days for, in order to meet the sort of the agile and all of the demand that exists for data and all the use cases that we have. So those two things kind of come along together fairly well, and the sort of thing that pieces them together is a SPVM framework.
Yeah, and that's an area that, you know, I'm working on something. Don't know how secret it is, but, you know, as we wrap up the podcast, Rawlinson, I know we can find you at Punching Clouds on Twitter, and your blog is punchingclouds.com. Any other places we can find you online?
That's basically it. That's pretty much as much as I want to be found. That's pretty much it.
Well, one thing, you know, I got to say, Rawlinson, this is the most serious conversation you and I have ever had. Okay.
Yeah.
usually we're hanging over at a bar, pardon the pun there, and you know, doing the social bit, which is it sounds crazy, but it's an important part of the community we play here.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well,
I'm
hey,
a fun guy, you know that.
Yes, I do. Yes, we do. Well, hey, Rawlinson, this has been a great chat. Really appreciate your time, and I'm going to put links to your blog and your Twitter feed on the podcast notes. Thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me, Rick. Awesome.